This is the Bears Barroom Radio Network, and the following program is suitable for all audiences.
It was a good day for the defense. I thought they came out and played fast, and again, we're throwing a lot of stuff at the offense right now. They're growing, so it was good for them to kind of see when they make some mistakes to be able to fix that on tape and then come out tomorrow, correct them, and move on. It's actually good for us because we're getting an experienced defense. So offensively, my message to the team and on the offensive side is just be patient and don't get frustrated. They understand that they're going to play a little bit faster than us right now, but we'll have some growing pains, but we'll get back to square one in training camp. I mean, it's fun. It's happy. I mean, everyone out here has smiles on their face. Everyone's running around having a good time. The defense is talking trash to the offense. The offense is coming, trying to give them comebacks. But it's fun. And that's what we wanted from this team, is to come out here and have fun, play hard, forget about mistakes. We don't care about those right now. We'll fix those later. Try to eliminate them and minimize them as much as you can. But so far, this is only day two of phase three OTAs, but I'm really happy with where we're at.
Bears fans, this is Bears on Tap. My name is Aldo Gandia, and you just heard Chicago Bears head coach Matt Nagy addressing the media on Wednesday after the first of 10 organized team activities with rookies and veterans. After these OTAs, the team will hold a three-day mandatory full-squad minicamp June 5th through June 7th. It's a busy time for the Bears and a busy time for us at the Barroom as we try to excavate as much information for you, the diehard Bears fan, before nothing much happens between June 8th and mid-July. To help us uncover some info is Danny Parkins, co-host of the McNeil Parkins Afternoon Show on WSCR 670 The Score Sports Radio in Chicago. But before we chat, allow me my opening thought. We've said it already a few times here at the Barroom, but it bears repeating. Listening to Matt Nagy swaggering boisterously at his news conferences is pure pleasure. Since I've been following the Bears, there's been only one head coach whose news conferences you just had to listen to. And I really did see George Halas coach in his last year with the Bears in 1967. Nobody was more entertaining than Mike Ditka. When the coach, whose face looked like a clenched fist, was in a foul mood, he'd use reporters as his punching bag.
What do you want to know? Come on.
First unit.
What? Doesn't matter which one run. There'll be a quarterback that'll be named next week that'll be the starter. There's three quarterbacks on this football team. Whichever one starts. Whichever ones don't, we'll back him up. Period. Cut and dry. It's nobody's concern but ours. Nobody's. Next.
You want it right now?
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
Good.
Okay. If you were 2-7, you'd be in a bad mood, too.
Ditka didn't possess the most brilliant coaching mind, but he was sharp-witted, and that was fun. After him, though, Dave Wannstedt, Dick Geron, Lovey Smith, Mark Trestman, and John Fox, they were all boring. All of them offered up a public speaking style that either motivated no one or left you knowing little, or both. Most of them could be caught lying, too. Hell, John Fox lied in his opening day news conference when he said this about his departure from the Broncos' head coaching job.
Hey, look, you know, I made a release. My feelings haven't changed whatsoever. We parted ways mutually.
Liar. John Elway, your boss in Denver, fired you. You were too boring, too conservative, and that was costing a very talented Broncos team that Elway had assembled. That was costing them wins in big games. But now we have in Nagy a coach whom I have yet to detect a fabrication, who openly admits that he has lots to learn about being a head coach and is relying on fellow veteran coaches like Vic Fangio to run the defense and Brad Childress to act as sort of a substitute head coach at times at meetings that Nagy can't attend. Nagy also teaches when he's at the podium. In just over 3 months, he's offered more about his players and coaching concepts than Fox did in three whole years. Of course, the real test for Nagy is how he'll sound once the autumn wind blusters in from Lake Michigan and he's knocked around upside down. But right now, he's laughing, conquering me with his candor, and just delivering a winning attitude. As promised, Danny Parkins is with us. He is the co-host of the McNeil and Parkins Show on 670 The Score, and that's afternoons Mondays through Fridays, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Danny, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for making time to talk to us about Chicago Bears football. We are, about 4 months from the start of the season, Danny. What's your impression of this Chicago Bears team? Are you hopeful that they can get back to the Super Bowl soon, or are you just kind of in a wait-and-see mode?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're on the right path, but it's probably a little premature to start talking Super Bowl before we've seen Matt Nagy coach a single game in the NFL. So, you know, I think they had a great offseason, and I think that they are finally on the right side of the bell curve when it comes to building a modern NFL offense and an organization that has all of the main parts aligned philosophically. With Ryan Pace, a young general manager, Matt Nagy, a young coach, Mitch Trubisky, a young quarterback, a blend of the West Coast and spread offenses, which we've seen take over the NFL over the last half decade or so. So I think that they've done a good job of surrounding Trubisky with offensive playmakers, where, you know, the excuses last year of he wasn't ready to play because he had such little experience and he had a bad offensive coaching staff and he had bad offensive playmakers. In one offseason, they removed all of those excuses and handicaps. So I expect Trubisky to take a big step forward this season, but there's a big difference between four straight last place finishes and being ready to contribute and compete for a Super Bowl. So I think we're still a ways off from that.
Prince Amukamara at the OTAs was asked why he returned back to the Chicago Bears, and he listed three reasons. He, Vic Fangio, the business side, and then he volunteered this.
And I want to win a championship, and I think having Mitch here, I think that's always the start. The quarterback's always the start, and just having Mitch and seeing his improvement and his effort, like, not everybody, I'm sure some people saw, but even when Mitch was the backup, Mitch was staying after practice and always working hard, and you love seeing that in a quarterback, especially a backup, and I've always just saw greatness in him ever since then, and I think this year he gets to really show it.
That's high praise. And also, when you spoke with Brian Urlacher recently on your show, Urlacher talked about entering Halas Hall and everybody in the building talking about Mitch Trubisky. A lot of pressure on this young man?
Yeah, but there's a lot of pressure on all quarterbacks, and especially first-round quarterbacks, and especially first quarterbacks taken in a draft when Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson are also drafted in the first round into appearingly much better offensive situations, and Watson looked like an MVP when he was healthy. It's high praise from Prince Amukamara. It's also the right thing to say. You know, the business side of it was a big thing for him because he is coming off of multiple one-year prove-it deals. So he finally got a multi-year deal with some long-term financial security. So just if I was parsing that answer a little bit, I would think that the business side was the biggest factor, and then familiarity on defense, and then yes, there is optimism around the Bears for Mitch Trubisky, and there should be, by the way. I think he has shown flashes of a very, very high ceiling quarterback, and then you add those other things around him like we were talking about earlier, I think he could have a big year.
All right, there are any concerns for you regarding the offensive line of this football team?
Yes, I mean, but that is probably the case for most offensive lines in the NFL. Kyle Long has to be good, and he recently has been more name than production on the field, but they've invested a lot in the offensive line. They extended Charles Leno. second round pick on Daniels, second round pick on Whitehair, big money to Long, cut Sitton, which was big money. Like, they've invested a lot of money and draft capital the last 3 or 4 years in their offensive line that it should be paying off with not an average offensive line, but a good offensive line. And so that's what I think is the expectation this year. No more shifting Cody Whitehair around, no more musical chairs with position groups. Like, it's time for them to play up to their draft position and their dollar amount. And I would say to this point, they've underperformed that a little bit. So the Bears offensive line should be a top 10 or 12 unit in the NFL, I would say.
What are your thoughts about Adam Shaheen, the second year, third round draft pick for the Chicago Bears? Was he a second or third rounder? Second rounder.
Yeah, second rounder. I think that he's got all of the athletic talent in the world, but it took him a lot of time to make the transition, both in terms of physicality and blocking, and also the playbook and figuring out how to get off jams at the line. And he looked like a guy going from D3 to the NFL in his rookie year without much else around him. I think it's interesting that they kept Deion Sims and paid Trey Burton all that money and still have Shaheen. So there's a lot of competition and depth at tight end. What I think is going to help him is that his role will be a little bit more defined this year. Trey Burton is clearly the move tight end, the guy who will line up more in the slot, go more in motion. Shaheen should have his role simplified in the offense this year, and he's not going to be a top four target in terms of the passing game, right? You'll have Tariq Cohen, obviously, Robinson, obviously, and then Trey Burton, obviously, and then a combination of Taylor Gabriel and Miller, the second round pick this year, and Shaheen. Like, they'll all be competing for 4, 5, and 6, I think, in terms of targets from Mitch Trubisky. So you want him to reach his full potential given how high of a draft pick they used on him. But I think that last year it was, there's no playmakers out there. Why isn't Adam Shaheen making an impact? Whereas this year, there's going to be quite a few playmakers out there. He won't be able to be keyed in on by defenses. He'll have a second year in the playbook, a second year in the strength and conditioning program. That I expect him to be better, but they're also not going to rely on him as much.
Over here at the bar room, we've been having a friendly debate with David Kaplan, your competitor over at the other radio station here in Chicago. And he has gone out and said that he doesn't think Jordan Howard, the Bears running back, is an elite back. Where do you fall on that opinion?
I think it's a stupid debate, honestly. Like, because elite is subjective. Like, is he a top five running? If I define elite as top five and you guys define it as top 12, then we're both right. You know, like, he's not a good pass catcher. And in this NFL, you need to be a good pass catcher, in my mind, to be a true versatile three down back. But he's one of the best between the tackles runners in the NFL. And his 2 year production is up there with the all time greats. He's done things in his first 2 years that no Bears running back in the history of the franchise has done. So, like, he is a very good running back, but I would take Gurley over him. I would take Ezekiel Elliott over him. I would take David Johnson over him. I would take Le'Veon Bell over him. I would take Saquon Barkley in this year's rookie class over him. I would take LeSean McCoy over him, like, because of their versatility. Alvin Kamara, I think, would be in that conversation. Like, I think he comes in the 8 to 10 range with guys like Kareem Hunt and Leonard Fournette, which is a very good place to be, but just because of his limitations pass catching. So for me, I would say not elite, but he's also really damn good and a Pro Bowler. So it all depends on your definition of elite.
Of the veterans that you mentioned, and I'd have to double check this, but I think Jordan Howard is within 5 pass receptions of most of those players, like Ezekiel Elliott, for instance. Now, Elliott missed.
Yeah, but games. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott's had suspensions, and there's an eye test there that if you watch them play, you can tell, right? And like other options and other weapons on that team that, you know, Jordan Howard was the only good offensive player on the Bears last year. Right. Tariq Cohen had some moments, and Jordan Howard's really good. Like, it's not a slight to Jordan Howard, but I'm confident that if every one of those running backs was a free agent, and teams just had the ability to draft running backs, right? Like if all of a sudden no teams in the NFL had running backs, everyone was a free agent, and there was a draft 1 through 32, I do not think Jordan Howard would be a top five running back selected.
Fair enough. But to
you?
Top five, I would say no, probably top 10 though. But
right, so you and I, so we're in the same place, and I would say if you're top 10 at running back, that's not elite.
Right, and I think that a lot of that has to do, per your point, about pass receptions. But the one thing that we have to keep in mind is that while Elliott had suspensions, Howard had Dow Loggins, and Dow Loggins just did not know how to use Howard efficiently. There were a couple of pass drops, and John Fox and Dow Loggins just reacted in such a negative fashion to that they didn't really give the guy the confidence that he needed in order to bounce back and make those crucial catches. There's also a video up on Twitter posted by Lauren Cox of the types of drops that he had, that those passes were not, you know, within the kind of normal catch radius you'd like to see thrown to a back who's only, you know, 5-7 yards downfield. But you know, something.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's all fair. But again, like if you're just debating elite, I don't think he'd be a top five back selected. And even if you want to blame his drops on the coaching and the placement of the throws, like, okay. But also just based on his athleticism and what he does in terms of being a bruiser, he's not doing the same things for you in the passing game that Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, Saquon Barkley, right? Like he's not running the same types of routes. You would never say, let's put Jordan Howard in the slot. Mm-hmm. Let's run a wheel route with Jordan Howard. Like that doesn't mean that he's not great and that he doesn't do the things that he's asked to do really well. It's just some of the things that Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson are able to do in the passing game, I mean, they're basically wide receivers, mm-hmm. you know, so when you can line those guys up in the backfield also, I just think that adds, in this NFL, that adds tremendous value.
Matt Forte or Jordan Howard?
For what?
For
offense?
Yes.
For this offense?
Pick a Bears running back for this offense, yeah.
I'd probably take Jordan Howard because you've got so many other pass catchers. Like you need to have the guy on third and two where you can have the threat of running the ball. And Forte was a better all around player than Jordan Howard, and he's done it for much longer than Jordan Howard is. So like Matt Forte is the better all time Bears running back, but for this offense, I'd probably say Jordan Howard.
Excellent. Okay, on your show, I mentioned earlier that you had on Brian Urlacher, and you asked him about Roquan Smith. Let me play that clip and also let people know that they can find the full podcast interview of that interview that you and your partner Dan McNeil had with Brian Urlacher over at 670thescore.com. Here's a 30-second clip of Danny asking Brian Urlacher about Roquan Smith.
Have you met or spoken with Roquan Smith yet?
No, I have not.
Because there's a lot of pressure on that kid. I mean, he gets drafted by the Bears, and he's being asked and compared to guys like you.
There's no comparing. I mean, the same thing happened to me. In your first couple of years, man, all you can do is just kind of embrace the history of the tradition of middle linebackers. And you got to be you, though, you know, because we're all different players. I wasn't like Buckus. I wasn't like Singletary. Neither one of them were like. So he has to be him and just do what he does best. And I think that alone will get him make a lot of plays for the Bears.
Great interview with Brian. Again, you can find that at 670thescore.com. Danny, what are your expectations for Roquan Smith in his rookie season and then moving forward as a veteran with the Bears?
I expect him to be good. It's a question of just how good. Like I think that he was one of the safest picks in the draft. He played in the best, most physical conference in the country, and it's one of the positions that's easier to translate and project from college to the NFL. I expect him to have the green sticker on his helmet as a rookie, as the person who calls out the defensive plays and the checks. He's a very cerebral player, and I expect him to lead the Bears in tackles this year. But I don't think that he'll be a Pro Bowler. necessarily this year. And I think a huge part of his success, you know, in a 3-4 in the NFL as a little bit undersized is going to be reliant on guys like Eddie Goldman and Akeem Hicks to keep guards and centers off of him so that he has, you know, clear paths to go sideline to sideline to get the run backs and the receivers over the middle and in the flat to rack up those tackles. But I think it's a question of how good will he be over the course of his Bears career. But I am very confident that Roquan Smith, barring multiple injury setbacks, will get a second contract with the Bears and be a defensive captain, a play caller, and an interior linebacker for them for the next 8 years at least. It's just a question of how good is he? Like, can he be great? We'll see. Like, time will tell in terms of his development to the physicality of the NFL. But is he going to be a linchpin of the Bears defense for years to come? I would say yes.
Now, this Bears defense last season was 10th in total yards allowed, 7th in sacks, 13th in takeaways. This according to the Chicago Tribune. What are your expectations for this defense? Can they move into a top 7, top 5 defense in the NFL in 2018?
They can. I think some of the stuff that, you know, in terms of DVOA and some of the advanced metrics, they were like a top 12 defense last year. The numbers, the counting stats that you do sometimes can be inflated if in blowout games and stuff like that, but it's a pretty good indicator of where they are. Top 5 defenses to me are defenses that you feel like are dominant and you win games because of, and that takeaway number is the big one there, right? It's not like yards allowed. Yards allowed is a bad way to measure defenses. Sacks is a flawed way to measure defenses because, yeah, they're great, they're impact plays, but if you get a 4-yard sack and it's now 2nd and 14, you can still overcome that easily. So third down defense, DVOA, turnover differential, things like that are the true impact plays are, is to me how I will judge the Bears defense. And for as solid as they were, the turnover margin stuff is where I still have some questions about them, right? Like Kyle Fuller and Prince Amukamara need to turn those passes defended into passes intercepted. And they've got to. Matty Jackson has to build on a very strong rookie year. Strip fumbles, excuse me, instead of just sacking the quarterback. Like, that's when you start to think about teams that have truly dominant defenses that you're really scared to play. The Bears' defense is solid. Like, I think that they will be right around the same as they were last year, and a lot of it will come down to health. Because, you know, they've got a serious deficiency right now in terms of pass rush from the outside linebacker position. And if you don't rush the passer, the quarterback has all the time in the world, and it doesn't matter how good you think your secondary is. So I'm worried about the Bears' natural pass rush without Vic Fangio needing to scheme it up a little bit to truly make those impact plays. So I'll be watching pass rush and turnover differential for the Bears this year. But I'd be surprised if they were top 5, but I absolutely think they can be in that 8 to 12 range again.
Where do you see Adrian Amos as a safety? Do you think he is a top 5, top 10 potential safety in this NFL?
I think the Adrian Amos conversation is just funny. No one is ranking box safeties of every 32. You know what I mean? I'm not qualified. You're not qualified. The vast majority of people are not qualified to do that. But because Pro Football Focus says that he is, we're like, oh, wow, Adrian Amos. He's good at what he's asked to do in the scheme, but he's not asked to do a whole lot in their scheme. So I think Adrian Amos is fine, but this idea that Adrian Amos is a top 5 player at his position, like, okay. Like, you're watching something different than I am, and you're going off of a metric that, while cool, like, so are you saying that you'd want to pay him Cam Chancellor money? No, that's ridiculous. So, you know what I mean? Like, there are impact safeties in the NFL, and then there are guys like Adrian Amos. And I think Adrian Amos is solid. I think it's a good thing to have him on the Bears. I think he helps with their defense up the middle and as a tackler and all that, but he is not an elite NFL player, no.
So what's the gap between him and, let's say, Harrison Smith, the safety from the Vikings, who was considered the top safety in the NFL, or maybe the second top safety?
I mean, well, Pro Football Focus would say very little. And I didn't watch every snap that Harrison Smith took last year, and I'm guessing most people listening now didn't. So I like the Pro Football Focus numbers, but what NFL people have told me about Pro Football Focus is they do a nice job, but they do it in such a vacuum that oftentimes the numbers are very, very misleading because they don't know what schemes are being called, what is being asked of a player in a particular formation. So if they're grading a player and he appears to, you know, not mess up an assignment or do his job, then that gets him a good grade. And we have people from Pro Football Focus on the show, so this isn't a knock on them, but they just have a limitation, right? In like what they don't know what the player is being asked to do on a particular play within that scheme. They just watch the play and see if he appeared to make a good play, be neutral, or make a mistake. And I think that's where, like, when you think of a guy like Harrison Smith, more of a playmaker, more turnovers, that sort of thing, bigger body of work. Whereas Adrian Amos, did you watch him last year and think that he was a game-changing player?
Game-changing, no, but an integral part of the Bears' defense, absolutely. And I'll give you, you're citing Pro Football Focus's grades. I'll give you a Pro Football Focus metric that goes in favor of Adrian Amos. He had two fewer defensive stops than Harrison Smith in 300 fewer snaps. So he's getting into the box and he's making plays, which is what he's being asked to do. And so, and also when we're talking about interceptions, which seems to be the biggest knock against Adrian Amos, let's remember that while the Chicago Bears pass rush was, what did I just say, 10th in sacks, in terms of pass pressure and disrupting the quarterback, they were among the worst in the league. And that's where you get interceptions, when the quarterback is forced to throw the ball faster. And the guy that's playing in the box is not going to get a lot of interceptions. So I think those are some of the things that go in favor of Adrian Amos perhaps being regarded as a better safety than some people say about him.
Sure, but would you rather have him or Harrison Smith?
At this point of the career, definitely Adrian Amos. I've seen enough. I've covered the NFC North as part of my job here extensively over the last 4 years, and I think Harrison Smith has peaked and is now at the descending part of his career. If you look closely at Harrison Smith's play last year, it's nowhere near the type of football he played a year or two ago. It just seems like the life expectancy of Harrison Smith's career is coming to an end, and Adrian Amos is ascending as opposed to Smith descending.
Yeah, you might be right. Football people that I've talked to, including around the Bears, just Adrian Amos isn't asked to do a whole lot like that. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. it doesn't mean that he's not good at what he does, but there's a large list of players that can handle Adrian Amos's responsibility as opposed to someone who's asked to do a little bit more in the scheme. So I would rank quite a few defensive players on the Bears above him personally, but you know that we'll see if he gets asked to do more this year. And your point about pass pressures is obviously a salient one, which is why they are going to have pass rush problems again this year.
Danny, I am a fan of your work over at 670 The Score. Before I let you go, I got to ask you a couple more questions. Number one, you told the Chicago Tribune this very interesting story that you may have been conceived on a very special day in Chicago Bears history. Can you share that, please, with our followers?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. My parents told me that neither one of them are Bears fans. My dad, a Packer fan from Wisconsin.
Oh, no.
My mom, a Chief fan from Kansas City. And they were, both in there. You know, they've been living in Chicago for a few years. My dad a little bit longer than my mom in 1985, but they were together and recently married, and the Super Bowl was a blowout. And so they, took halftime as an opportunity to do what you do in a blowout, especially when you don't really care about the halftime entertainment of the game. And then 9 months later, 9.5 months later, during the World Series – I was born. So conceived during the Super Bowl, born during the World Series.
That is hilarious. That is hilarious. And I suppose that you'll be adding to your family when the Bears get back to the Super Bowl, just to keep the tradition going, right?
Yeah, why not? Why not? Seems like as good a time as any.
There you go. Also, I want to ask you about the role of sports radio stations in covering the Chicago Bears. We here at the Barroom, we're the diehard Bears fans. We want information. We want the shoe size of Roquan Smith, the name of the assistant trainers, and so forth. What does your show do for 5 hours in terms of making decisions about what to cover about the Chicago Bears and what not to cover?
I mean, I don't look at it like that. I think that our goal is to entertain people for 5 hours a day. Like, there's Bears reporters that are out there at Halas Hall at every practice, right? Our job is to have a conversation about sports and life and whatever to be as entertaining as possible. Like, nothing in my contract talks to me about, you know, breaking stories on the Bears or reporting on shoe sizes. It's to have as many listeners as possible between, you know, of men between the ages of 25 and 54, which is what our advertising demographic is. So my job is to talk about things and be entertaining about things, which often does include the Chicago Bears, to people in that age range. So, you know, I don't think that the majority of the city is interested in Roquan Smith's shoe size, to use your example. So, you know what I mean? There would have to be something that would be funny to come out of that. So, like, I would not be the one to break that story, if you will. I'd maybe pass it along. But so, you know, everybody in the city watches the Bears game. We talk about the Bears game the next day because that has mass appeal. The assistant trainer's name is something that does not have mass appeal. So we probably would not be discussing it unless the assistant trainer did something that was noteworthy, which is unlikely. So I don't know. I don't know if that exactly answers your question, but
not quite. Well, for instance, excuse me for interrupting. For instance, OTAs. What's been your coverage of, like, yesterday's OTAs? What are you planning on covering today on the Score?
Well, today on the Score, we have Brent Musburger, we have Jason Stark, we have John Paxson, and we will put on our Bears reporter from OTAs if and when there is something that is newsworthy out of it. There's not something that is newsworthy every single day.
Sure.
Football teams lie. Football teams misdirect. You know what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
So we will, once OTAs are over, we will certainly do, like, a recap report on it, but I think that it's a little bit of a misnomer that every single day, every single minute, there's news that needs to be disseminated immediately. And if that information, you know what I mean, like, that doesn't mean that Dan Weiderer and Rich Campbell and Brad Biggs won't file a story every day, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that story is interesting. So I have a little bit higher barometer. Like, I just don't think the Bears are on top of mind for the majority of the city right now. Mm-hmm. So will we do a little Bears today? Yes, but the Cubs are a much bigger story today, and the Bulls fallout is still a bigger story from the draft lottery. And then I think the Bears, like, so today the Bears are probably the third biggest story in the city, and they probably always around the third biggest story, right? Like, the Bears are the biggest deal in town, them and the Cubs. So it's just a balancing act every day of making news judgment on what people want to hear. And, you know, whenever we're talking Bears, people are like, why aren't you talking Cubs? Why aren't you talking Sox? Whenever we're talking Bulls, they're like, why aren't you talking Hawks? So you can never please everyone, which is why having 5 hours is a great thing. We can try to get to everything.
Well, I'll tell you this. When you talk Bears, it's very, very interesting, and I appreciate your time. Before I let you go, tell me what it's like working next to a radio legend, Dan McNeil.
It's been surreal, to say the least. But no, it's been really cool. Not having a voice for the first month or so of it has made it be a little turbulent on takeoff. But yeah, if you would have told me 2 years ago that I would be hosting afternoons in Chicago on the home of the Cubs and Bulls with Dan McNeil, who I interned for as a junior in college. Well, 2 years ago, I was doing afternoons in Kansas City and Mac was basically retired from sports radio. And and I'm the home of the Cubs and Bulls, my two favorite teams. And the Cubs had only recently come to the score, and the Bulls were not even on the score yet. It would have been a 10,000-to-1 long shot. So it's been a total whirlwind for me career-wise, and working with Mac is, it's a trip every day. It's crazy.
Well, you're very talented at what you do. Tell our listeners where they can find you on Twitter, and again, where they can listen to like Bears podcasts, your interviews with Urlacher and so forth.
Yep, 670thescore.com. We'd appreciate it if people would, like you're doing to this podcast, just give us a subscription, right? And subscribe, rate, review, leave a 5-star review. You can find it on any podcast provider, Apple, iTunes, Google, Stitcher, Play, you know, all of the ones out there. So just subscribe to the McNeil and Parkins podcast and leave a good review. We'd appreciate it. And if you find yourself wanting to stream us at the radio.com app or 670thescore.com at your desk, between 1 and 6, we'd love you to listen live to the show, AM 670 on your radio dial. And, of course, at Danny Parkins on Twitter.
Excellent. Danny, we'd love to have you back when there's more significant Bears news to talk about. But really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, of course. You guys do good work anytime.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. That was fun. Make sure you follow Danny on Twitter, Danny Parkins, P-A-R-K-I-N-S. And next week on the Bears Barroom Radio Network, we'll have a new Bears Hour live on Monday night. If you want to hear it live, just head over to MixLR.com. If you're not subscribed yet, just hit in Bears Barroom Radio Network. That will get you email notices on when our live shows are. But we definitely have one Monday night with Bears Hour Live with Draft Dr. Phil and his moderator, Bears Girl. Then on Wednesday morning, we have our signature show, our 2-hour, sometimes 3-hour, 4-hour gabfest of hilarity, naughty talk, Bears analysis, original music, attempts at comedy. That's on Wednesdays. It's called Bears 100 Proof. And then we're back here next Friday with another Bears on Tap. We've got a Buffon 55 scheduled, I think, in a couple of weeks. We'll keep you posted on that. So lots of stuff happening with the Bears, and the Bears Barroom Radio Network is the best place you can get tons of information. And bearsbarroom.com. Head over there. There's a great article up there by John Santucci, the Tooch. He teamed up with his buddy from across the pond, George Bayless, and they wrote a piece on how Vic Fangio can generate a pass rush. It has gotten excellent reviews, over 1,500 hits in its very first day. So head over there and read that. And the Tooch has another new article happening soon. Danny Santucci has all 7 scouting reports up now on the Bears draft picks. Brett Maley just wrote an article about why he is all in on the Bears, and maybe the days of suffering are over for us Bears fans. So lots of fun reading there at bearsbarroom.com. Finally, I'll leave you with this. Remember, if you drink, please do not drive, and always bear down.